Chapter 4. Divine Inspiration. A Gathering. Contact. Motep stared into the water, so still and clear its surface was like silver. The face that stared back at him had hard and chiselled features with a handsome bone structure, despite the velvet cowl that partly concealed it. Hooded eyes spoke of intelligence, and skin so tan and smooth that it was utterly without imperfection suggested the nature of his legion, the Thousand Suns. Motep was dressed in iridescent robes that pooled like deep red liquid around him as he knelt with head bowed. Stitched in runes, his attire suggested the arcane. He was at the heart of his private sanctum. The ellipse-shaped chamber had a low ceiling that enhanced the sense of claustrophobia created by the sheer volume of esoteric paraphernalia within. Stacks of scroll cases and numerous shelves, replete with well-thumbed archaic tomes, warred for space with crisscross cabinets filled with bizarre arcana. An oculum of many-hued lenses, a bejewelled gauntlet, a plain silver mask fashioned into an ersatz skull. Upon a raised dais, there was a planetarium in miniature, rendered from gold, the stellar bodies represented by gemstones. Gilt-panelled walls were swathed in ancient charts in burnished metal frames, cast in the azure glow of eldritch lamps. A red marble floor stretched across the entire room, engraved with myriad paths of interlocking and concentric circles. Runes of onyx and jet, etched into the stone, punctuated the sweeping arcs without regularity. Motep was at the nexus of the design, at the point where all of the interweaving circles converged. A chime registered in a voximeter built into the sanctum's entry system indicated a guest.
"Enter, Kalamar," said Motep.
A hiss of escaping pressure accompanied the aid as the door to the sanctum opened and he shuffled into the room.
"How did you know it was I, Lord Motep?" asked Kalamar, his speech fraught with age and decrepitude.
"Who else would it be, old friend? I do not need the prescience of Magnus to predict your presence in my sanctum."
Motep bent towards the bowl, plunging both hands into the water to lightly splash his face. As he came back up, he withdrew his cowl, and the lamplight reflected from his bald scalp.
"And I need no sophisticated augury to divine that you bring important news either," Motep added, dabbing his face with his sleeve.
"Of course, sire, I meant no offence," said Kalamar, bowing acutely.
The serf was blind and wore ocular implants. The augmetic biosensors built into his eye cavities could not see as such, but detected heat and provided limited spatial awareness. Kalamar supplemented his somewhat unorthodox visual affliction with a silvered cane.
"My lord, we have docked at Vangelis," he added finally, confirming what his captain already knew.
Motep nodded, as if possessed of sudden understanding.
"Have the Legion serfs prepare my armour. We are leaving the ship at once."
"As you wish," Kalamar said, bowing again, but as he was retreating from the sanctum he paused. "My lord, please do not think me impertinent, but why have we docked here at Vangelis when our journey's end lies at Prospero?"
"The paths of destiny are curious, Kalamar," Motep replied, looking back down at the bowl.
"Yes, my lord."
Even after over 50 years in his service, Kalamar did not fully understand his master's cryptic words. When the Legion serf had gone, Motep rose to his feet, his voluminous robes gathering up around him. From within the folds of his sleeves, he produced a stave-like object, no longer than his forearm, and covered in arcane sigils. Stepping away from the circle, a single eye was revealed at its centre as he took a bizarre course through the labyrinthine design of the room. It represented the wisdom of Magnus, Primarch of the Thousand Suns Legion and Genefather to Motep. Locked in his cabalistic route, Motep arrived at an ornate, lozenge-shaped vessel and reverently placed the stave within it. The vessel was much like a gilded sarcophagus, similar to that in which the rulers of ancient Prospero had once been entombed. The item secured, Motep sealed the vessel shut, a vacuum hiss of escaping pressure emitting from its confines, and inputted a rune sequence disguised within the sarcophagus's outer decoration.
"Yes,"
uttered Motep, the task done, absently caressing a scarab-shaped earring.
"Very curious."
"It's a low turnout," muttered Antigues beneath his breath. Within the stark grey ferrocrete austerity of the Ultramarines muster hall, three Astartes awaited Cestus and his battle brothers. The three were seated around a conference table inset with a single arcing yew, a huge tapestry depicting the auspicious day when the Emperor came to Macragge in search of one of his sons, framed the scene. Clad in glorious armour of gold, a shining halo about his patrician features, the Emperor stretched out his hand to a kneeling Rabut Gilliman, who reached out to claim it. That day their Primarch had been truly born, and their legion's inception cemented. Even now, and rendered as mere artistry, Cestus could not help but feel his heart lift. "With such short notice I had expected less," the Ultramarine confessed, approaching the gathering with Antigues. Cestus's battle brother had briefed his captain on the attendees. Bryngar he knew, of course, but the two others, a Thousand Sun and a World Eater, he did not. Cestus and Antigues were joined by four more of their brothers, Lexinal, Pitaron, Excelinor and Mora, for the sake of appearances. The rest, Amrix, Leradis and Thestor, were with Saphrax on a separate duty. The Ultramarines had called the gathering, so it was only proper that they arrived at it in force to show their commitment. "Greetings, brothers," Cestus began, taking his seat alongside his fellow Ultramarines. "You have the gratitude of Gilliman and the Eighth Legion for your attendance here this day." "As is well," said a bald-headed Astartes with richly tanned skin. "But we beseech you to illuminate us as to your plight." His voice was deep and powerful. Clad in the panoply of the Thousand Suns Legion, a suit of lacquered dark red and gold power armour, as angular and proud as the monuments of Prospero, he cut an intimidating figure. Antigues had already informed Cestus that the Thousand Sun was Fleet Captain Motep. Darkly handsome, bereft of the usual battle scars and functional facial bionics wrought by years of unremitting warfare, this Motep had a curious, aloof air. His shining eyes seemed to bore into Cestus's very soul. Not all of the assembly were so respectful of his obvious power.
"The great wolf values silence over idle chatter, so that he might heed wise words otherwise lost in needless interrogation," snarled Bryngar. The animosity he felt towards the son of Magnus, obvious. It was the Wolfguard, already pledged to Cestus's cause, together with Antigues, that had summoned the legions on Vangelis to this meeting. They had done so with passion and curt request, divulging little of what Cestus needed of them. The Space Wolf had at first railed against the inclusion of a Thousand Sons to be their potential sword brothers in this deed. The conflicting character of the two legions did not lend itself to a ready accord, but Cestus had reasoned that they needed every soul, and Motep had answered the call. What was more, he also had his own ship, a fact that only served to bolster the small fleet he was trying to assemble. The captain of a Thousand Suns ignored the Space Wolf's thinly veiled insult and leant back in his chair with a gesture for Cestus to proceed. The Ultramarine's captain told the assembly of his squad's scheduled extraction from Vangelis by the Fist of Macragge and of the astropathic message that had very nearly wrecked the control hub of Corallis Dock. He even confided in them his fears that some unknown enemy had destroyed the ship, but he did not mention his experience in the reactor core. Cestus was still processing what he had seen. Visions were the province of sorcery, and to divulge that he, an Ultramarine, had witnessed one would undermine his credibility and arouse suspicion as to his motives.
"Perhaps this deed was committed by an alien ship. Orkulks have been fought and crushed by my legion as far as the Segmentum Solar," said a voice like iron.
Skral was a world-eater, an Astartes of the 12th Legion, and the third of the invited warriors, including Bryngar. He wore battered Mark V power armour, rendered in chipped blue and white, the colours of his legion, clearly eschewing the Corvus pattern suits worn by his battle brothers. The armour was heavily dented in several places, sporting numerous replacement parts, and the battlefield repair work was obvious. Formed of basic materials, the plates were held together by spikes, the manifest studs clearly visible on the left pauldron, greaves, and gorget. The helmet rested on the table next to the warrior. It was similarly adorned, and bore a fearsome aspect of blade and ballistic damage that revealed bare grey metal beneath. Skral's face was the mirror of his armour,
cross-hatching scar tissue a map work of pain and suffering. A thick vein across his forehead throbbed as he spoke. His bellicose demeanour, coupled with a nervous tic beneath his right eye, gave him the outward appearance of being unhinged. The world-eaters were a fearsome legion. Much like their primarch Angron, they were a primal force that fought with fury and wrath as their weapons. Each and every warrior was a font of rage and barely checked collar, bloody echoes of the battle-lust of their primarch.
"That is possible," said Cestus, deliberately holding the gruesome warrior's gaze, despite Skrall's obvious belligerence. "What is certain is that a ship of the Emperor's Astartes has been attacked by enemies unknown, and for some nefarious purpose," he continued with building anger, and got to his feet. "This act cannot go unreckoned."
"Then what would you have us do, noble son of Gilliman?" asked Motep, ever the epitome of calm.
Cestus spread his hands across the table, laying his palms flat as he regained his composure.
"Astropathic decryption revealed a region of space that has been identified by the station's astrocartographer. I believe this is where the Fist of Macragge met its end. I also believe that since the ship was headed for the Kalth system and a rendezvous with my Lord Gilliman, it is possible that their attacker was heading in the same direction."
"A substantial leap of logic, Ultramarine," Motep countered, unconvinced by Cestus's impassioned arguments.
"I cannot believe that the very ship carrying five companies of my battle brothers and en route to Kalth was destroyed before reaching Vangelis in a random act of Xenos contrition," Cestus reasoned, his need for urgency fueling his frustration.
"How are we to find this Slayer vessel, then?" asked Skrall, thumbing the hilt of his chain axe, the urge for carnage obvious. "If what you say is true, and the distress call you received from the vessel is old, the prey will be far from that location."
Cestus sighed in agitation. He wished dearly that he could make his brothers see what was in his heart, what he knew in his gut. For now, though, he dared not, at least not until he could make some sense of what he'd seen. There was no time for delay.
"Our position on Vangelis bisects the route of the Fist of Macragge, the route it would have taken to Kalth. In short, it is ahead of the site of its demise. If we make ready at once, it is possible we may be able to catch the enemy's trail."
Silent faces regarded him. Even Bryngar did not look certain of the Ultramarine's reasoning. Cestus realized that it was not logic that guided him on this course, but instinct and inner belief. The image of Macragge, seen for an instant in the flash of the reactor, burned fresh in his mind, and he spoke.
"I do not need your aid in this venture. I have already sent one of my battle brothers to commandeer a vessel from this very station, and I will take it to the site of the first of Macragge's last transmission. With luck, we can pick up a trail to follow and find whoever is responsible for what happened to it. No, I do not need your aid, but I ask for it. Humbly," he added, pushing the seat back and kneeling reverently before his fellow Astartes, with head bowed.
Antigues was aghast at first, but then he too left the table and kneeled. The other Ultramarines followed his lead, and soon all six of Gilliman's sons were genuflecting before the rest of the council.
"The sons of Rus do not refuse an honour debt," said Bryngar, getting to his feet and laying Felltooth upon the table. "I will join you in this endeavour."
Skrall stood next and set his chain axe with the Space Wolf's rune blade.
"The fury of the world-eaters is at your side."
"What say you, son of Magnus?"
Bryngar growled, his savage gaze falling upon Motep. For a moment the Thousand Sun sat in calm reflection, considering his answer. He laid his ornate scimitar with the other weapons, its gilded blade humming with power as he unsheathed it.
"My ship and I are at your disposal, Ultramarine."
"This council's greatest opponent, I should like to know why," said Bryngar.
Motep smirked with amusement at the Space Wolf's rancor, but refused to be baited.
"You all know of the events at Nykeia concerning my Primarch and Legion, and the sanctions placed upon us that day,"
the Thousand Sun said plainly.
"I am keen to foster improved relations with my fellow Legions, and where better to start than the vaunted sons of Rabut Gilliman?"
Motep nodded respectfully at the final remark, a deliberately weak attempt to cover the slight. Cestus cared little for the discord between the two Astartes, and arose, Antigues following his example.
"You do me great service this day," Cestus said with genuine humility.
We meet at Corallis Dock in 1 hour. The Saturnine fleet had existed before the Great Crusade, carving out a miniature empire among the rings of Saturn. Its strength and longevity had been based on a tradition of navigational skill, essential to negotiate the infinitely complex puzzle of the rings. Its rolls of honour noted the first time it had encountered the warships of the fledgling Imperium. Its admirals saw a brother empire based on the demonstration of power and not just empty words or fanaticism, and signed a treaty with the Emperor that still held pride of place in the Admiralty spire on Enceladus. Its ships had accompanied the Great Crusade to all corners of the galaxy, but their spiritual home had always been in the rings, the endless circle of Saturn boiling above them. The Wrathful was a fine ship, Cestus admitted to himself as he stood upon the bridge alongside Antigues. It was old and lavish, panelled and decorated with the heritage of a naval aristocracy that predated the Imperial Army and its fleets. Its bridge looked like it had been lifted from a naval academy on Enceladus, all dark wood map tables and glass-fronted bookcases, with only the occasional pict screen or command console to break the illusion. A ring of 9 view screens was mounted on the ceiling, where they could be lowered to provide an all-angles view of what was happening outside the ship. The command crew were in the dark blue brocaded uniforms of the Saturnine fleet, all starch and good breeding. In commandeering this vessel, Saffrax and his battle brothers had performed their task well. "Rear Admiral," said Cestus as he approached the captain's post, a grand throne surrounded by racks of charts. The throne rotated to reveal Rear Admiral Kaminska. Cestus could almost see the proud heritage etched upon her face. Strong jaw, fine neck, high cheekbones, with a slight curl to the lip that suggested acute arrogance. "Captain Cestus, it is an honour to serve the Emperor's Astartes," she responded coolly. Saffrax had described the Admiral's reaction to the acquisition of her ship to Cestus as he and the rest of the Ultramarine Honour Guard had boarded. It was prickly and vociferous. She gave a near imperceptible nod by way of acknowledgement. The gesture was all but lost in the high collar of her uniform and the thick furred mantle that hung around her shoulders. Admiral Kaminska was a stern-faced matriarch. A monocle over her left eye partly obscured a savage scar that cracked that side of her face. The monocle-sweeping chain was set with tiny skulls and pinned to the right breast of her jacket. She carried a control wand at her waist, secured by a loop of leather, and a naval pistol sat snugly in a holster at her hip. Gloved hands bore a lightning flash emblem made from metal. They were tense and gripped the supports of her command throne tightly. "The Wrathful is an impressive ship," said Cestus, attempting to dispel the fraught atmosphere. "I am glad you could respond to our summons." "Indeed it is, Lord Astartes," Kaminska said in clipped tones. "It would be a great pity to sacrifice it upon the altar of futile vengeance. As for your summons," she added, face pinching tight with anger, "it was hardly that." Cestus held his tongue. As an Astartes fleet commander, it was within the remit of his authority to take command of the ship. For now, he decided he would allow the Admiral some leeway. He was sketching a suitable reproach in his mind when Kaminska continued, "Captain Vorloff of the Boundless has also requested to accompany us, although you'll find he is of a more placid demeanour." Cestus had heard of the vessel and of Captain Vorloff. It was a warhorse ship of the fleet, its combat scars too numerous to count. Its star was in decline, as better, more powerful ships made their presence felt in the greater galaxy. Cestus suspected that the Boundless had been docked at Vangelis for some time, its role in the Great Crusade somewhat diminished, and that Captain Vorloff did not wish to submit to atrophy just yet. "Very well," said Cestus, deciding against rebuking the Admiral. He had, after all, taken her ship for a mission of dubious reasoning. Her attitude, he told himself, was to be expected. "You have your heading, Admiral. There is little time to lose. The Wrathful is the fastest vessel in the Segmentum Solar. If your enemy is out there in the void, then we will catch him," Kaminska assured him, and whirled her command throne back around to her instrument panels. Admiral Kaminska bristled furiously as the Astartes departed the bridge. She had come to Vangelis to effect repairs and take on supplies and replacement crew. She'd been looking forward to a week or so of recuperation, yet at the word of the Emperor's angels, Lord Regents of the galaxy, it seemed, she and her ship were pressed back into service with barely a moment's notice. By the authority of the Emperor of Mankind, those words were an unbendable edict that Kaminska could not refuse. It was not that she resented serving. She was a dutiful soldier of the Imperium who had distinguished herself on numerous occasions for its greater glory. No, she took umbrage at the fact that this particular mission was fostered on hunches and, as far as she could tell, whimsy. It did not sit well with Kaminska. Not at all.
"Lord Admiral, the escort squadron is in position," said helm's mistress Athena Venkmeyer.
Her long hair was tied up severely, and her shoulders were forced to attention by the brocade of her uniform.
"Good," Kaminska replied. "Screens down."
The ring of viewscreens descended and glowed to life. The bright, hard gleam of Angelis was visible from the assembly point, surrounded by a fuzzy shoal of lesser lights, satellite listening spires, fleets at anchor, and orbital debris. A distant sun was a brighter point, automatically dimmed by the viewscreen's limiters. Icons blinked onto the screens, showing the positions of the other ships in the makeshift fleet. The four escorts, Fearless, Ferox, Ferocious, and Fireblade, were flying in a slanted diamond around the Wrathful. The vessel of the Thousand Suns and Captain Motep, the waning moon, was a short distance away. Even at this distance, the Astartes craft was impressive, a sleek dart of red and gold. The Boundless, a cruiser like the Wrathful, but fitted out with decks for attack craft, was further out, still making its approach. Satisfied that they were about to disembark, Admiral Kaminska flicked a control stud on the arm of her throne, and the bridge voxcaster opened up.
"Loose escort pattern. Keep the waning moon in our lee. Advance to primary waypoint. Plasma engines, 3/4.
3/4!
Came the yell from helmsmate Loden Kant at the engine helm.
"Mr. Okadas, the Terrawood end of the tertiary core transit, if you please," said Kaminska, having opened up a line to her principal navigator.
"At your word, Lord Admiral,"
was the dour response from the navigator's sanctum. The tertiary core transit was the most stable warp route from Segmentum Solar to the galactic southeast. It would take them to their destination expediently and hopefully allow the Wrathful to gain some ground on whatever foes, real or imagined, awaited them in the void. It was also the route that any voidfarer, if he or she did not want to take a 4 to 5 year detour, would take to arrive at the Kalth system. The Astartes had been very specific about that. Admiral Kaminska would have liked to question it, but there was no bringing the Emperor's angels to account on such a triviality. She would defer to the Astartes' order, since he was in charge. It would have been unseemly to do otherwise. Kaminska resolved to discover the truth later. The Wrathful's engines kicked in, banishing the Admiral's thoughts to the back of her mind. She could feel the vibration through the panelled floor of the bridge. The escort squadron moved into formation on the viewscreens, followed by the waning moon and the Boundless. Whatever was out there, they would find out soon enough.
"There is an energy trail here. It's degraded but discernible," said Principal Navigator Orcardus's voice from his inner sanctum on the Wrathful.
The Imperial ship and her fleet had reached the region of real space as indicated by the coordinates provided by Captain Cestus, the supposed site of the destruction of the Fist of Macragge, in short order. They found no sign of the ultramarine vessel. There was merely a faint energy trace that matched the Fist of Macragge's signature. Unlike battles on land, where evidence of a fight could be seen clearly and obviously, conflicts in space were not so easily identifiable. Wrecks drifted. Ships could be caught and destroyed in black holes, space debris drawn into the gravity well of a passing moon or small planet. Even solar wind could scatter the final proof of a battle ever having taken place. So it was that Kaminska had instructed her navigator to search for whatever energy traces remained behind, those last vestiges of plasma engine discharge that lingered in spite of all other evidence dissipating due to the ravages of space.
"By Saturn, the output must have been massive,"
Orcardus continued with rare emotion.
"Whatever ship left this wake is gargantuan, Admiral."
"It is possible to follow it, then?"
Kaminska asked, swiveling in her command throne to regard Captain Cestus, standing silently alongside her.
Orcardus's reply was succinct.
Yes, Admiral.
Do it, Cestus told Kaminska grimly, his expression far away. Kaminska scowled at what she perceived as arrogance and returned to her original position.
Then do so. Set radar array to full power, Mr. Orcardus. Take us onward.
Brotherhood, said Zadkiel, is power.
Surrounded by novices in the sepulchral gloom of the cathedra, he loomed high above the assembly within a raised pulpit of black steel.
It is at the core of all authority in the known galaxy, and the source of humanity's dominion. This is the word of Lorgar, as it is written.
As it is written, echoed the novices.
Over 50 word-bearers had gathered for the seminary and knelt in supplication before their lord, wearing grey initiate robes over their crimson armour. The cathedral's ceiling soared on stone-clad struts overhead, adding acoustic power to Zadkiel's oratory, and the air was as still and cold as a vault. The floor, tiled with stone pages cut with passages from the word, emphasised that this was a place of worship. It was the very thing that the Emperor had forbidden in his legions. Idolatry and zealous faith had no place in the master of mankind's new age of enlightenment. But here, in this place, and in the hearts of all Lorgar's children, faith would be honed into a weapon. One of the initiates stood among the congregation, indicating his desire to respond.
Speak,
said Zadkiel, quelling his annoyance at the impromptu interruption.
Brother can turn on brother, said the novice, and thus become weakened. Where, then, is such power?
In the half-light, Zadkiel recognised Brother Altis, a zealous youth with ambitious temperament.
That is the source of its true power, novice, for there is no greater rivalry than that which exists between siblings. Only then will one seek to undo the works of the other with such vehemence, giving every ounce of his being to claim victory,
Zadkiel said arrogantly, enjoying the feeling of superiority.
Upon gaining mastery over his kin, that brother will have forged a mighty army so as to overthrow him. He will have plumbed deep of his core and unleashed his hate, for in no other way can such a victory be achieved.
So you speak of hate, said Altis, and not brotherhood at all.
Zadkiel smiled thinly to conceal his impatience.
They are two wings on the same eagle, equal elements of an identical source, Zadkiel explained. We are at war with our brothers. Make no mistake of that. In his short-sightedness, the Emperor has brought us to this inexorable fate. With our hate, our devotion to the credos of our Primarch, the all-powerful Lorgar, we will achieve our victory.
But the Emperor holds terror, and in that surely there is strength,
Altis countered, forgetting himself.
The Emperor is brother to no one,
cried Zadkiel, stepping forward as his words crushed Altis's challenge easily. Silence persisted for a moment, Altis shrinking back before his master as he was being chastened. None in the cathedral dared speak. All were cowed by Zadkiel's obvious power.
He lurks in his dungeons on Terra, Zadkiel continued with greater zeal, but now addressing the entire congregation. The exactors and bureaucrats, the flock of Malkador who run Terra's regency, they shy away from all ties of brotherhood. They sit on a pedestal above reproach, above their brothers, above even our noble war master.
The crowd roared in assent, Altis among them, kneeling once more.
Is that brotherhood?
The novices roared again, gauntleted fists pounding the breastplates of their armour to emphasise their fervour.
These regents create a stale, meaningless world where all passion is dead and devotion is regarded as heresy.
Zadkiel spat the words and was suddenly aware of a presence in the shadows behind him. One of the Furious Abyss's crew, helmsmate Sakharov, a man with delicate data probes instead of fingers, was patiently awaiting Zadkiel's notice.
"My apologies, Lord," he said once he had crossed the few metres between them. "But Navigator Esthemia has discovered a fleet of pursuing vectors in our wake."
"What fleet?"
"Two cruisers, an escort squadron, and an Astartes strike vessel."
"I see." Zadkiel turned back to the congregation. "Novices?"
"You are dismissed," he said without ceremony.
The assembled word-bearers departed in silence into the shadows around the edge of the cathedral, heading back to their cells to ruminate on the word.
"They are gaining ground, my lord," said Sakharov once they were alone. "We are powerful, but these ships are smaller and outmatch us for speed."
"Then they will reach us before we arrive at the tertiary core transit."
It was a statement, not a question.
"They will, my lord. Should I instruct the Magos to force the engines to maximum power, it is possible we could make warp before we are intercepted."
"No," said Zadkiel after some thought. "Maintain course and keep me updated as to the fleet's progress."
"Yes, sire," replied Sakharov, saluting and then turning sharply to return to the bridge.
"My lord Zadkiel," said a voice from the gloom.
It was Altis, concealed by the shadows, but now stepping into the light at the centre of the cathedral.
"Novice," said Zadkiel, "why have you not returned to your cell?"
"I would speak with you, master, of the lessons imparted."
"Then illuminate me, novice."
There was the slightest trace of amusement in Zadkiel's tone.
"The brothers of whom you spoke, you were referring to the Primarchs,"
Altis ventured.
"Go on."
"Our current course will bring us into conflict with the Emperor. To the unenlightened observer, it would appear that the Emperor rules the galaxy and the throne of Terra cannot be usurped."
"What of the enlightened novice? What do they see?"
"That the Emperor's power is wielded through his Primarchs," Altis said with growing conviction, "and by dividing them, the power of which you spoke is realized."
Zadkiel's silence bade Altis to continue.
"It is how terror can be defeated, when Lorgar's brothers join with him, when we bring war to those who will inevitably side with the Emperor. We will yoke our hatred and use it as a weapon, one that will not be denied."
Zadkiel nodded sagely, suppressing a prickle of annoyance at this precocious yet insightful youth. Altis, however, had overreached himself. Zadkiel saw the naked ambition in his eyes, the flame within that threatened to devour Zadkiel's own.
"I merely seek to understand the word," Altis added, exhaling his fervour.
"And you shall, Altis,"
Zadkiel replied, a plan forming in his mind.
"You will be an important instrument in the breaking of Gilliman."
"I would be honoured, lord," said Altis, bowing his head.
"Truly blind men, like Gilliman, are few," Zadkiel counselled. "He believes religion and devotion to be a corrupting force, something to be abhorred and not embraced, as we followers of the word do. His pragmatic retardation is his greatest weakness, and in his dogmatic ignorance we shall strike at the heart of his favoured legion."
Zadkiel spread his arms wide to encompass the cathedral, its high vaults and fluted columns, its pages of the word, its altar and pulpit.
"One day, Altis, the whole galaxy will look like this."
Altis bowed once more.
"Now return to your cell and think on these lessons further."
"Yes, my lord."
Zadkiel watched the novice go. A great passage in the Sermon of the Word was unfolding, and Altis would play his part. Zadkiel turned back to the pulpit, behind which was a simple altar. Zadkiel lit a candle there for the soul of Rabut Gilliman. Blind he might be, but he was a brother of sorts, and it was only right that his future death be commemorated. Aboard the Wrathful, on one of the ship's training decks, two world-eaters clashed furiously in a duelling pit. It was one of several arenas in a much wider gymnasium that was replete with dummies, weights and training mats. Weapon ranks lined the walls. The Astartes had brought their own stocks of training weapons with them, and sword breakers, short blades, bludgeons and spears were all in evidence. It appeared that the concept of simple training was anathema to the duelling sons of Angron. Amidst the storm of blades and unbridled bloodlust, the world-eaters fought as if to the death. Armed with unfettered chain axes and stripped to the waist, wearing crimson training breeches and black boots, their muscled bodies revealed gruesome welts and long, jagged scars. With a roar, they broke off for a moment and began circling each other in the sunken chamber of the pit. White marble showed up dark splashes from where the gladiators had wounded each other early on in the contest. A narrow drain at the centre of the pit was already clogging with blood.
"Such anger!"
Antigis commented, overlooking the contest from a seated position at the back of the auditorium before which it was staged.
"They are Angron's progeny," said Cestus alongside him. "It is their way to be wrathful. Properly employed, their wrath is a useful tool."
"Yes, but their reputation is a dire one, as is their lord's," replied Antigues, his expression stern. "I, for one, do not feel at ease with their presence on this ship."
"I have to concur with my brother, Captain Cestus," added Thestor, who was watching the show alongside Antigues.
The burly Astartes was the biggest of the honor guard. Unsurprisingly, his bulk went well with his role of heavy weapons specialist. The rest of the honor guard were nearby, except for Saphrax, watching the ferocious display with mixed interest and disdain. Thestor echoed the thoughts of all his brothers when he next spoke.
"Was it necessary to bring them with us at all?"
he asked, his gaze shifting back from his captain to watch the fight.
"This is the business of the Ultramarines. What has it got to do with our Legion brothers?"
"Thestor, do not be so narrow-minded as to think we do not need their aid," Cestus chastened the heavy-set Astartes, who glanced over at his captain. "We are a brotherhood, all of us. Though we each have our differences, the Emperor has seen fit for us to conquer the galaxy in his name together. The moment we seek our own personal glories, when we abandon solidarity for pride, is the moment when brotherhood will be shattered." Thestor regarded the floor when his captain had finished, shamed by his selfish remarks.
"You may take your leave, Thestor," said Cestus.
It wasn't a request. The big Astartes got to his feet and left the training arena.
"I agree with you, Cestus, of course I do," said Antigues, once Thestor had gone. "But they are like savages."
"Are they, Antigues?" Cestus challenged. "Are Bryngar and the Wolves of Rus not savages too? Do you hold them in such disregard also?"
"Of course not," Antigues replied. "I have fought with the Space Wolves and know of their courage and honour. They are savages in their own way, yes. But the difference is that they are possessed of a noble spirit. These sons of Angron are bloodletters, pure and simple. They kill for the simple joy of it."
"We are all warriors," Cestus told him. "Each of us kills in the Emperor's name.
Not like them, we don't."
"They are Astartes," Cestus said, biting out his words and turning on his battle brother.
"I will hear no more of this. You forget your place, Antigues."
"I apologize, Captain. I spoke out of turn," Antigues replied after a moment of stunned silence. "I only meant to say that I do not approve of their methods or their deeds."
At that, the Ultramarine turned back to watch the battle. Cestus followed his battle brother's gaze. The Ultramarine captain did not know either of the World Eaters in the dueling pit. He knew precious little of their leader, Skrall. This was ritual combat. No slight, no besmirching of honour had occurred to bring it about. Yet it was bladed and deadly.
"I do not either," Cestus admitted, watching as one of the combatants nearly lost his arm to a wild swing of his opponent's chain axe.
The Ultramarine had heard stories from his fellow legionnaires about the so-called cleansing of Arigata, one of the World Eater's more infamous battle actions. The Legion's assault on the Citadel there had reputedly left a charnel house in its wake. Cestus knew full well that Gilliman still sought a reckoning with his brother Primarch Angron concerning the dire events of that mission, but this was no time for recrimination. Necessity had forced Cestus's hand, and whether he liked it or not, this was what he had been dealt. Skrall led 20 World Eaters on the Wrathful, and Cestus was determined to make the best use of them. Bryngar had brought the same number of Bloodclaws, and while they were raucous and pugnacious, especially when forced into idleness in the confines of the ship, they did not harbour the same homicidal bent as the bloody sons of Angron. Motep was the only Astartes not aboard the Wrathful. He had his own ship, the Waning Moon, but no squads of Thousand Suns, just cohorts of naval armsmen at his command. Barely 50 Astartes and the vessels of their makeshift fleet, Cestus hoped it would be enough for whatever was in store.
"What troubles your brother?"
asked Antigues, their brief altercation swiftly forgotten. The Ultramarine finally turned his back on the battling World Eaters, deciding he'd seen enough.
"The message at Corallis Dock sits heavily on me," Cestus confessed. "The clenched fist, crested by a laurel crown, represents Legion, our Legion. The Golden Book? I don't know what that means. But I saw something else."
"In the reactor flare," Antigues realized. "I had thought I was hearing things when you asked us if we'd seen anything."
"You were not. And yes,
I saw it in the reactor flare, so fleeting and indistinct that at first I believed it was my imagination, that my mind was articulating what my heart longed for.
"What did you see?"
Cestus looked Antigues directly in the eyes.
"I saw McCragg."
Antigues was nonplussed.
I don't...
"I saw McCragg, and I felt despair, Antigues, as if it presaged something terrible."
"Signs and visions of the province of witchery, brother captain,"
Antigues counselled warily.
"We both know the edicts of Nicaea."
"Brothers?"
a voice broke in before Cestus could respond. It was Saffrax, come from the bridge where Cestus had instructed he maintain a watch on proceedings. Both Saffrax's fellow ultramarines turned to him expectantly.
"We have made visual contact with a ship from the site of the Fist's destruction."
"That is a Legion ship, Captain. You are not suggesting that a vessel of the Imperium fired upon one of its own?"
Admiral Kaminska warned the Astartes. Following Saffrax's report, Cestus and Antigues had made for the bridge at once. What they saw in the viewscreen when they got there had stunned them both. The vessel they tracked in the void was of Mechanicum design and clearly made for the Legion. It was bedecked in the iconography of the Word-Bearers. It was the largest ship that Cestus had ever seen. Even at a considerable distance, it was massive, easily three times the size of the Wrathful, and would have dwarfed an Emperor-class battleship. It bore an impressive array of weapons. Tech adepts aboard the Wrathful had suggested port and starboard broadside laser batteries and multiple torpedo tubes to the prow and stern. It was the monolithic statue towering at the vessel's prow, however, that gave Cestus the most concern. A gigantic golden book, the echo of the fragmented image in the astropathic message on Vangelis.
"We're at extreme strike range," said Captain Commander Vorloff. "What are your orders, Admiral?"
"Hold them back," said Cestus, deliberately interrupting Kaminska. "They are our Legion brothers. I am certain they will be able to account for themselves. They may have information regarding the Fist of McCragg." Vorloff was a paunchy man with jowls that wobbled independently of the rest of his body. He had a gnarled red nose that spoke of long nights drinking to keep away the cold of space, and dressed in the heavy furs typical of his saturnine heritage. His presence filled the viewscreen through which he was communicating with the bridge of the Wrathful.
"Yes, my lord," he said.
"No point rattling the sword without reason," Cestus muttered to Antigues, who nodded his assent. "Hang back and keep them within range, but do not approach.
Admiral Kaminska, bring the Wrathful in at the lead. Keep the waning moon and the escort fleet in our wake."
"As you wish, my lord," she said, swallowing her annoyance and her pride. "Relaying orders now."
The tension around the bridge was palpable. Bryngar, having joined them a moment before, growled beneath his breath.
"What is your plan, Cestus?"
he asked, eyes locked on the viewscreen and the mighty vessel visible beyond it.
"We draw in close enough to hail them and demand to know their business."
"On Fenris, when stalking the horned orca, I would swim the icy depths of the ocean, taking care to stay in the beast's wake,"
Bryngar said with intensity.
"Once I drew close enough, I would slip my baleen spear from my leg and launch it into the orca's unprotected flank. Then I would swim long and hard to reach the beast before it could turn and impale me on its horn. Within its threshing swell, I would seize upon it and with my blade pare its flesh and gut its innards. For the orca is a mighty beast, and this was the only way to be sure of its demise."
"We will hail them,"
Cestus affirmed, noting the savagery that played across Bryngar's features with unease.
"I won't commit us to a fight over nothing."
"Admiral," the ultramarine added, turning to Kaminska.
"Helmsmaid Kant, open up a channel to the vessel at once," she said.
Kant did as ordered and indicated his readiness to his commander. Kaminska nodded to Cestus.
"This is Captain Cestus of the Ultramarine 7th Chapter. In the name of the Emperor of Mankind, I am ordering you to state your designation and business in this subsector."
Static-fringed silence was the only reply.
"I repeat, this is Captain Cestus of the Ultramarine 7th Chapter. Respond!"
he barked into the bridge vox. More silence.
"Why do they not answer?" asked Antigues, his fists tightly clenched. "They are legionaries like us. Since when did the sons of Lorgar fail to acknowledge the Ultramarines?"
I don't know. Perhaps their long-range vox is out. Cestus was reaching for answers, trying to deny what he had known in his heart ever since Vangelis. That something was wrong, terribly, terribly wrong.
"Signal one of the frigates to make approach," Cestus ordered after a brief silence, eyes fixed on the view screen like every other soul on the bridge. "I don't want to come in with our cruisers," he reasoned. "It might be perceived as a threat."
Kaminska relayed the order in curt fashion, and the Fearless closed on the unknown vessel.
"I shall follow them in," said Motep from a second view screen on the bridge. "I have half a regiment of Prospero Spire Guard standing by to board."
"Very well, Captain. But keep your distance," Cestus warned.
"As you wish."
The view screen went blank as Motep took active command of the waning moon. A tactical array abruptly activated, depicting the closing vessels that were virtually lost from sight in the viewport. The Word-Bearer's ship was a red icon on the display, surrounded by sensor readings of the approaching frigates, little more than green blips in its presence.
"This reeks," snarled Bryngar,
who had begun prowling the bridge with impatience,
"and my nose never lies."
Cestus kept his eyes on the tactical array. Macragge, the image of his Macragge, seen as part of the astropathic warning in the reactor core, came to mind once more. How were the fates of this vessel and his homeworld entwined? The Word-Bearers were his brothers. Surely they had nothing to do with the destruction of the Fist of Macragge. Such a thing was unconscionable. Cestus would have his answers soon enough. The Fearless had reached its destination.